Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. It is Tuesday, March 29th, 2022. This is scan number 2887. The type of show we're having tonight is a survivor professional night. We have a very special survivor professional guest for us this evening, than none other than our founder and leader, Bill Murray. A little bit more on Bill in a few minutes, but I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I am from Bellevue, Washington. I am also an adult survivor of child abuse, and with me on the line this evening is my co-host, Annie Marcus, who is from California, also a longtime NASCA family member, and John Anderson from Louisiana. Not only is he on our NASCA board and a longtime NASCA family member, he's also our show's producer. So I welcome Annie and John this evening. We're just waiting for Bill to arrive. And before he does, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about tonight's show and about our founder. So tonight is an open mic forum. It's called a Survivor Professional Night and Evening. And we feature an adult survivor of child abuse who's also a professional in terms of their health and profession. And they co-host our show. And we field topics brought by you, the listener. So Bill, our survivor professional this evening, it's just strange for me to call him our guest too, because he's also our founder of NASCA and CEO. He is from Los Angeles. And his recovery, Bill's recovery, is 12-step based, and it spans over 3.5 decades. Bill was sexually abused by numerous clergies, all men, between the ages of 11 and midway through high school. He was a minor seminary, and he was also the victim of prepubescent pornography and even a 2-week kidnapping. Bill was graced to have found Alcoholics Anonymous when he was 30 years old. The program not only helped him get clean and sober, but also gave him a place to give up his secrets and the tools by which he's recovered. He believes one can use, the 12-step process to heal from child abuse trauma, find a way to a comfortable life. So on our Survivor Professional Open Mic Forum type shows, we welcome various co-hosts, such as Bill, Survivor Professionals, who assist us in fielding questions and lead a variety of topics suggested by our call-in participants. So we encourage you to call in. And the number to do so is area code 646-595-2118. So to become involved, to get involved in the show this evening, all you have to do, no experience necessary, is dial the following number, 646-595-2118. Before I bring on Bill, I really want to talk to you a little bit more about NASCA and NASCA's mission, because NASCA is all about, as you know, child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to sexual abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, involving many services to adult survivors of child abuse, information for anyone interested, and the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I encourage you this evening to call in. It's an open mic forum. Bring up topics that you'd like to discuss with Bill and our panel. We welcome you, and no experience of being on the panel previously is required, just a curiosity to get involved. Number is 646-595-2118. So without further ado, I'm going to open up all the mics, and now they're all open. And Bill, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being our special guest this evening. And it's a privilege to be on your host team.
You guys get to suffer from my talking about every other month, because I only come on when, I come on deliberately when there's a fifth Tuesday or a fifth Thursday, because we have people to do 1, 2, 4 of each kind. But some months have the fifth one, so I fill in on those days. So today, here's the weird thing about today is there's not only a fifth Tuesday, but I don't remember a time this has happened. There's also a fifth Thursday. So I got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, there's five. There's five Tuesdays and five Thursdays. So that's unusual. But anyway, thank you so much for your
for that day, Bill. Ready to go.
I've just arranged for it. Thank you, though. We'll get somebody else, though.
Okay.
I do. Ray Luskin and I just confirmed that she would come on Thursday. This will be her first time being a co-host or a hyphenate, as we know. Hyphenates are, for those who don't know, are people who are both survivors and some kind of activist or professional. And Ray certainly is that. She's out of, I think it's Texas, might be Chicago, but anyway, central U.S., and she will join us on Thursday night. She may take up residence every something or other, every third Tuesday or something, because it looks like we have one hole in the schedule that she might be able to fill for us. But anyway, let's get started with the show. I have a specific set of things that I want to talk about tonight, but I think we should start with a little bit of just a background on my story a little bit. But I don't want to spend a huge amount of time on that unless people want me to. But I have other things, new stuff that's been happening to me that I want to get to. That biography you read is pretty full. You know, it says a lot of stuff about me. And as you can see, my abuse began in grade school. I was about 11. And for 3 years, I was abused in a summer camp. That's where the abuse camp happened. Within 2 weeks after the summer camp on the third year finished, I had a long time planned appearance at a minor seminary in Pennsylvania. And so I showed up like 2 weeks after my last abuse by the original abuser. And I was really lost and really hurt, and I didn't know what to do about it. In fact, the weeks before that were the weeks where I say in my bio that I was kind of kidnapped. I was taken to places I didn't know where they were. I did know I was in New York somewhere, but that didn't help much. And I was taken around New York City to Manhattan to Brooklyn to Queens, and then eventually up to Vermont to a summer camp for boys, not the one I was molested at, but this one was a nudist camp, basically, for little boys. And everybody there was maybe 13-ish or something like that, it seemed to me. And I was shocked. And then the whole excursion had been explained to my parents as an opportunity to take Bill, me, to see Expo 67, which was similar to a World's Fair in 1967, an opportunity that I wouldn't get otherwise. But the brother that had been molesting me for 3 years was extremely well known by my parents, and they had been groomed lots of different ways, but one of them was I was taking sort of legitimate, if you want, photographs of myself that were taken by the brother home with me every summer, and they loved his. He was a great photographer, frankly. They loved getting these little, you know, gifts of photographs of their son. And, of course, those were all legitimate photographs, but behind every one of them, there were a dozen non-legitimate, in other words, pornographic photographs. And he was the summer camp counselor who was in charge of the swimming pool. We had an Olympic pool, some of the water sports, and he was one of the things I was into was canoeing. And then and he was the camp photographer. So he had the world at his feet because he had his own dark room. And, you know, that's where a lot of the molesting began, where you could bring the boy into the room and turn on the red light that's on the outside of the door, and nobody would come in because they know you can't come in when the red light's on. And so I went with him to Montreal. We actually spent one night at Expo 67 because he also needed to acquire or produce a few pictures of myself standing in front of some of the famous exhibits like the Habitat and the Globe they had and so forth. They were famous back then. And that way he could prove that we'd been there. And then he took me, and I was refusing to do anything with him, and it was pissing him off, really pissing him off. Fortunately, I figured out later that I was really lucky. He was not a violent man. He was an angry man because of what I was doing, but he wasn't violent. So he put up with it until it was time to send me home, and he put me on a bus and sent me home. And that was that. Now, like I say, 2 or 3 weeks later, I'd had a pre-planned checking in at the minor seminary in freshman year of high school, and I was eventually to go there for 4 years, all 4 years of high school, and actually it's the only place that I went to where I got a degree, a high school diploma. But I told the priest that was my prefect, my supervisor, who asked me, you know, if I'd ever had any homosexual experiences, and I denied it. And he asked me again a week later, and I denied it. The third time he asked me, I thought to myself, I got to tell him something because he knows something is going on. So I asked to see him, went down to his room, which he wanted me to do, went in there and had a confession with him. Now, if you don't know what confession is, it's a big deal for Catholics. It's it's one of the sacraments where the penitent, myself, talks about the experiences they've gone through and their sins, especially. And the representative of Christ, which is the priest, listens to this and sometimes advises you and always gives you some kind of penance, and at the end asking you if you've told him everything that you want to tell him, gives you absolution for everything you've told him. It's a cleansing of the soul. And when you leave the booth from the confessional booth, it's about the size of a phone booth. You usually go out in the church and kneel down and say the prayers that he gave you to say as a penance. And that's it. Well, he had me tell him all the stories of what had happened to me in the previous 3 years. And I mean, he told them, we spent hours in his place. He gave me confession. He gave me, absolution. And he also advised me on what some of the things that I should do. And I thought when I left his room, because I had looked so many times for a way to get help and I couldn't find it, I felt, thank God, you know, somebody at least has heard me and is going to take these stories, take my experience seriously and help me. But it turned out that he himself was a predator. And it wasn't long before another predator, another priest came forward, and then another, and then an upperclassman, and then a kid in the college that was 4 years ahead of us or something. And, you know, I was running away from them. The first 2 years were horrible because I refused to interact with them. I didn't want to because I kept being pursued. And I couldn't understand this. Why did they think that I wanted this? Because I was not attracted to men or boys at all, and never. But they could tell, and I guess predators can, the injured kid, you know, and I had been injured as an 11-year-old, starting as an 11-year-old. So I guess that was easy for them to pick out. Plus, we were all boys. So maybe they just tried a few boys until they found one that, you know, they felt they could get over on. But whatever it was, I spent the first 2 years really terrified that I'd be required, if you will, to submit to them in a variety of ways. The last 2 years at this place, I did a little better because I was angry and I was pissed, as a matter of fact. And in the last 2 years of St. Vincent, the place I went, I grew up a little. I had a growth spurt. And because of that, I was several inches taller and bigger and I had more muscles and so forth. And they kept away from me. They may have gone to another kid. I don't know. But they kept away from me. So all of that was, I needed to tell you because that was, let's see, I graduated high school in 1971. So that's quite a few years ago. I went off to college, which I eventually went to twice. I went to two different colleges with a few years between them. Didn't finish either time. The first college was in Toronto, the University of Toronto. I had a good experience, but I couldn't pay attention. I drank like a fish as soon as I got away from St. Vincent. And, you know, I couldn't keep my mind on work. Plus, I didn't choose very well the curriculum that I was following. And in one case, for example, I picked chemistry, and I had no business picking chemistry. I was not going to be a scientist. I don't know why I picked it. And it was a lot harder than our high school chemistry. So the guy, he kind of took pity on me, and he told me, I went back to school, summer school, to take it over. And he said, you know, he said, if you promise me you'll never take another science class, I'll give you the B that you need. That's how I got over. I got the B and I came back to school. But anyway, the point is that I didn't graduate from U of T. I went back down to New York City, got myself an apartment, eventually went to NYU, New York University, did a couple of years of that, did not complete the degree but got close, with a degree in film and television. At least now I knew I was doing something that attracted me. And again, I was drinking like a fish. Went out to California in 1980 with my future wife and the future mother of my child. She dragged me to California, and I did not want to go. But when we got here, you know, I kind of tried to get serious about a career and so forth. And I was doing quite well, actually. It took about 4 years for me to both do well and then to start to crash. And at the end of the 4 years, in 1984, I surrendered my problem of drinking and using, and I went to an AA meeting. Now, that was 39 years ago, I believe it is. And I've been continuously clean and sober since then. I've also applied the same 12 steps to other processes, other programs, other problems, including the biggest one, which is a trauma recovery. Because I had searched and searched for trauma recovery when I was young, and people didn't even believe little boys could be abused. So even the professionals that I went to were like, you know, what are you talking about? They didn't understand. You know, what do you mean you were raped? You know, they didn't believe it, you know. But I applied the same steps because the big book, the basic text of AA, says that it's really not about staying sober. It's about having a design for living. That's what it describes it as, so that you will never need to drink, because there won't be the pressures and the fears and so forth if you change your life and if you appeal to a higher power. These are all things that are important for me to explain, because I wanted to get to a point where I could tell you what's happened in the last few days. But I'll stop here and allow, let's see, we have Annie, John, Billy, and who's our host?
Penelope.
Whoops, John left. Penelope, John just left. Guess he didn't like
he'll
it.
He'll be back. Sometimes he drops and comes right back on. I think this is start line.
Penelope, yeah. Yeah, right. He probably bailed. So anyway, this will be a discussion show. There he is. This will be a discussion show because I'm going to encourage questions and so forth, but it will be focused on the experiences that I've had as a survivor professional rather than, of course, we can discuss things outside of that as time goes, gets to the show. But I want to just pause at this point and give people here, 4 other people, an opportunity to chime in with any questions or comments at this point.
Well, Bill, I'd like to introduce and invite Billy into the discussion, if you'd like to, Billy.
Yep.
And your mic is unmuted. And just if you have a question or comment for Bill, I'd like to invite you to go first, if you're comfortable with that, and give you the floor.
Sure.
Before we all take over.
No. Thank you, Bill, for sharing. And I was a guest on your show about a month or so ago. And I think, you know, obviously a lot of similarities between the confessions, and that's where my grooming started. But I'll tell you the biggest thing I struggle with every day, and like, you know, I'm pretty hard on my head, and I evaluate myself, which I think is a good thing. But the biggest problem I have is like I just feel beat. This guy's still a priest in my hometown. I'd be lying to you if I knew I said I know how to get past it, because that's one of the things I'm struggling with. And forgiveness, I don't think I could forgive him, and it's a struggle. I mean, I don't know. I mean, my life, I feel like, is 70% good, but there's 30% of it that I guess I get stuck in. Any advice to try to get to a better place? I don't know. I can't lie to you. I deal with a lot of anger, and Massachusetts has crazy laws, and we all know, you know, how that is. But he's still a priest up there. He married me and my wife, baptized my kids, and it kills me. I can't lie to you, but thank you for your share, and we'll go with that. And thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome, Billy. It's not something you do quickly. Okay, I'm in recovery. Like I said, I'm in my 40th year of recovery, so it took a long time to get where I am today. However, it didn't take a long time to start making real strides that reduced the anger and the fear. And in doing that, I released myself from the power that I was giving the priest that had done it years ago. And that's why you want to work the program. You don't You don't work the program so you can forgive him. You work the program so that you can reduce the stress that's on you because you're not focused on him. You don't focus on him. Your trauma is your trauma. He may have caused it, yes, because of the actions he took, but he has no longer any power on you unless you give it to him. So it's more complicated than I'm saying it right here, but the point is that it takes a while.
I understand. Yeah, I understand that. I've been in therapy close to 8 years. Sometimes I do question whether I should go through like a 12 step. I mean, you got to fill the toolbox with whatever you can. And I think I do pretty good. But I mean, sober 8 years. I mean, that's great. But still, I mean, I'd be lying to you. I mean, as we all know, is like, I can put together why I was using drugs to dim those memories, but I think the things that we struggle with without the drugs and alcohol is like having that clear on your conscience. And like I said, I mean, I've always been an individual, and I just struggle with it. I mean, it's the effects of abuse. I mean, they call it murder of the soul, and I think it that describes it. You know, for me, is like I don't know. I carry it on my heart, and I probably shouldn't, but it's hard to deal with. There's really no other better answer for that, you know.
It is hard to deal with it. If it wasn't hard to deal with it, then everybody, you know, would be in recovery. And it's powerful. It's hard to get into recovery. So, you know, I don't think you're doing badly. I think you're doing well. It's not about being poor. However, you just said it yourself. You're not looking for an opportunity to forgive them for their actions. You need to give up the responsibility you feel for yourself. Maybe you're calling yourself, you know, you caused it on yourself. You allowed it on yourself. You called on it for yourself. And all those kinds of things are making responsible the wrong person, you, because you're not responsible. It's the perpetrator always who's the responsible party.
No, I'm pretty subtle with that. Do I consider myself weak? No, I had no father growing up. He knew this. I was sent to this priest for probation, 100 hours of community service with the person. I mean, it's not. I'm finding out it's pretty uncommon. I'm pretty involved with a lot of meetings I do with a lot of different organizations. But like the thing I've never heard is like here in Massachusetts, and it's called the Merrimack Valley, is like, you know, if you got in trouble, you were assigned to a priest, and that's pretty uncommon from what I'm gathering. And it's just crazy. It's crazy how he's been in and out of my life for a long time until I had a job loss. And, I mean, I kind of thank that job loss now because I probably wouldn't be here to be quite honest with you, but it changed my life. I mean, I'm 53 years old and I had the job loss at 40. And, I like I said, I'm hard on myself. I mean, I self-evaluate myself. I mean, things are a lot, obviously a lot better than... Yeah.
And that's just what I said. I just said that. You're hard on yourself. It's the wrong person to be hard on. You know, he's the one.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to fix not the drinking, but, you know, the causes of the drinking that are in you, because that will allow you, relieve you of the desire, the intense desire to go drink again. And that's what we want.
Yeah.
We don't want that desire, but it's hard to avoid until we kind of work our way through the steps, maybe a few times. I don't know. There's different people, it's different things. But I'll tell you what,
yeah.
I use the steps on all kinds of things, and one of them is my recovery. Because you can apply the steps to whatever problem you have in your life. Just modify the way you read the steps, of course, to include the word that you're trying to work on. So in our case, trauma, childhood trauma, perhaps. And not alcohol or alcoholism, and it works right. It works great, you know. The thing about it is, you know, it's absolutely free. You know, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's everywhere you go. Anyway, does that help at all?
Thank you. Yeah, of course it does. Yes, no, I really appreciate that.
We're going to stop again in another few minutes, but I got to get moving forward because I don't want to lose the time I have to tell the story that's important for me to tell tonight. So we'll be back.
Yeah.
All right?
Thank you so much. Yes.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Billy.
Penelope, where do you want me to go?
Would you like, you know, unless Annie and John have any burning questions for you, I know you have more information you want to share. So, Annie and John, if you're okay with allowing me to have Bill move forward with what he wants to share, that'd be great. Otherwise, please ask your questions so we don't lose, you know, I don't want you to lose your question and opportunity to interact with Bill as he closes.
No,
this segment, move on.
I'm not worried. But, Penelope, I'm not worried right now. If we overdo it, I would be, but I'm not right now. There's plenty of time on the show. It's still got an hour left,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anybody that wants
I'm
to ask
good
me
with
anything
it.
At this point.
Yes, I have something to say and a question for Bill. If I could just get that in. Bill, first of all, I want to thank you so much for what you've done here, okay? Because, you know, we wouldn't be here tonight, a lot of us, and people that are listening around the world without you, period, you know? So I'm really so anxious for you to tell us how and these 12-step-based, you know, program helped you in this way. And what was your favorite step, okay? And the last thing that I have to say is to Billy is that if you listen to Bill's story, this is exactly what you need to be listening to, because you know why? Because we're here together tonight, and we are family, and we understand. And you're at that age. I understand. You're exactly at that age. That is the worldwide national average being 52, 53, you know, and I'm proud of you. I just want to tell you that. Listen to Bill's story, and I'm telling you that the reason why we're even sitting here tonight is because of exactly where he was, and look at you, where you were, okay? But look where he is now. And let's listen and find out how he got there.
Okay. Thank you, John. It's very nice of you to say all that. I'm gonna entertain any more questions at this point, but I'm going to move forward. I want to move forward, too. So does anybody have something I can answer quickly or anything? No? Okay. Let me explain that the next thing I'd like to explain is that I got the message. I got a really good home group. That's important. I think it's kind of akin to having a really good therapist. You know, your home group, it's called a home group, is the group that you repeatedly attend in AA that has what you want. In other words, the sense of the group's members are following a path that's led them to become a kind of person that you admire. And as you have to do that, what they do in order to get what they've got, like that. So my home group was in Hollywood, California, and it was called the Great Fact Group. The Great Fact is actually in the big book. It says, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the Great Fact for us. So that's where the name of the Great Fact Group comes, and it is a spiritual group, of course. But it's a bunch of men and girls, but men and women, helping each other, because that's what, just like here, you're going to find a lot of similarities between NASCA and AA, because my experience is AA. And when I put this together, I, of course, incorporated all kinds of other things that were sort of traditional in terms of therapies and so forth. But it follows pretty much a AA kind of shape. You know, we have a singleness of purpose. We have the 12 traditions we follow. Whatever we do here, we follow a basic set of principles that are you would recognize if you're an AA person. A lot of people come into the group and say, do you know anything about blah, blah, blah? Yeah, I know. I began to really succeed, and I was going back and forth between California and Florida. My mother had died. My sister had died, and my mother was in Florida, and I was the only one left. So I had to start going back and forth to serve her. What happened was eventually she started to get dementia. And I had not gone as public as I am today. I had gone public in terms of talking in meetings and even talking at a couple of conventions. But I'm right out there now, and I don't care who knows, you know. But back then I did. And I believe that's a valid thing to be concerned about, you know, and you have to be careful about. And nowadays it's not an issue. But back then I did not want my mother. One of the problems was I did not want my mother to be embarrassed by her son running around telling his story of abuse. She was already hurt enough that the church had, quote, done this to me. In other words, her. And it didn't happen to her. It happened to me. But we were so Catholic, that's how she felt about it. And so when she got the Alzheimer's, it was an opportunity for me to go a little more public. And I began to look around for a local group that I could attend in Florida that would accommodate my need for a community, basically. I couldn't find one. I visited a lot of places, or called up a lot of places, and there was something wrong with all of them. One of them was too tough. You know, they were like tough guys. Another one was too expensive. They charged thousands of dollars, you know, to belong, and so forth. There were lots of reasons that I wouldn't join one group or another group or another group. So it occurred to me, well, you know, I've been looking for a while. Why don't I start my own group and see if that works? And that's how it was as simple as that NASCA came about. I did know that the process, I believe the process of the 12-step system would work, and I knew something about other therapies. So I created NASCA based on the spiritual principles, as I say, of a 12-step program, but I didn't make it required that people follow the 12-step program, which is one of the things I did not like about some of the other groups. They insisted that you had to do something a certain way, okay? And I did not like to be told what to do, ever. And so I knew that if I didn't like it, probably other survivors wouldn't like it. I eliminated that need from NASCA. Today, as you know, you are encouraged to take advantage of anything you want. We talk about every kind of therapy there is. We explain all the therapies, including 12-step therapies and so forth, to people. But we don't tell them they have to do this or they have to do that. We tell them what we've done, and, you know, but everybody else's experience is valid too. And, you know, if you are serious about being in recovery and you want what I have, you're probably going to have to do what I did, you know, like that. But there's no mandate. We don't have any dues or fees. We don't have any rules you have to pay. Accommodates the need for anonymity if you have it. We're going to have a guy soon that didn't want to use his last name. I said, no problem. So he's going to be, you know, a single letter for his last name. That's fine. We do that in AA sometimes too. Today, you know, there are more people that are willing to put their name out, but there's still a lot of fear. So we eliminate that fear and we accommodate them. It's completely free, everything we do. And we do about 30 things, a lot of things. Over time, we've developed many different programs, and they're all available to everyone. There's no special accommodation for anyone in particular, any type of person. We are here for every survivor of any kind of child abuse, and that means male and female and transgendered and gay and bi and whatever, lesbian, but also He means people who were sexually assaulted, emotionally abused, or violently assaulted, or neglected. In any combination, all four, or one, or two, or whatever combination, because that's your life and your experience, and we appreciate that, and we ask you to come forward to trust us enough, and it's a big deal, you know, to share with us what's gone on with you and let us share back some of our thoughts and perhaps some of the path that we've taken. And, you know, if you wish, there's no requirement, but if you wish, and I think someday you will, most of us do, you will follow some of that. You'll try it yourself. And there's no problem. We always say, you know, try it. If you don't like it, come back. We'll try something else. You know, there's no requirements. Anyway, that's how NASCA began. Out of a desire of mine, since I couldn't find a group that I could join comfortably, I would create a group, but I'd make sure that it was as comfortable as could be for as many people as could be. And that's what we have here. So there are now, I don't know how many. To be honest, John, I don't know how many people there are. They think there's 5,600 in the one group and 2,500 in the other. And I have no idea how many people visit the website because that's not our focus. We're not focused on the numbers and improving the statistics because it's one person at a time that matters. So one of the biggest tools we have is this show. And most of the shows, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at this point, are the opportunity for people to hear someone telling their story, which I'm doing tonight, but I normally wouldn't. But you would do it Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. And then the opportunity to ask questions or make comments to that person. It's really revealing. And the reason we do it is because we hope to impress a newcomer who's perhaps still terrified with the mere thought of opening their mouth, you know, because our fear is about telling the story. You know, it's we are sick because we keep the secrets. And we say we're as sick as our secrets, but then I believe that we're also revealed, we're as healthy as we can be revealed. And you can't reveal everything all at once, but a little bit at a time, and a little bit at a time, and a little bit at a time. In other words, we don't do this for ourselves. We do it for the newcomer who might be here listening tonight and doesn't know or didn't know until now that they were encouraged to come forward, that they could be a member of the NASCA family, which is what we call it, and they too could come in and find somebody to help them or a number of people to help them listen to the show for a while until perhaps, if they are, they might want to tell their story some night, and of course we would support them in doing it. That's why we do it, for them, not for us, because we all know how big of a deal it was to cross that boundary between the silence and the secrecy that we carried with us perhaps 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and now revealing, you know, our innermost self. We're scared to death, but it's okay. The NASCA members will hold your hand. We will be available for you. We have quite a few contacts and so forth, and we have basically 5 shows a week at nighttime and 3 a week during the daytime, which are not shows, but they're meetings. So there's every day, and even more than that, an opportunity to be hugged by the group or the show over and over and over, okay, for free. And then someday, hopefully, pick up your own standard and join the group, you know, become one of the people that tell your story. Maybe I'll stop there in case anybody wants to ask anything, if you want to.
Thank you, Bill. So I actually want to invite Billy in again. We're basically in our second round of going down the panel. We try and break the panel times during the show. So Billy, did you have any more questions or comments for Bill?
No, I just continue to listen to all the good stuff Bill's saying, and I'm just taking it in, and just trying to get good advice, and It's very helpful, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank
well,
you.
Well, it's our pleasure, of course, right, Penelope? Our privilege.
Exactly. It's an honor. It's an honor. Billy, I agree with Bill's comments. That's definitely an honor. Annie, did you have any more questions for Bill before we move on to the next segment?
Well, I do have one question, and that is, do you think that being abused by religious figures affected your spirituality?
Oh, sure. It affected all kinds of things, you know, but one of them was my spirituality. I had been brought up extremely Catholic, you know. My family was very, very devoted to Catholicism, and that wasn't just my immediate family. It was all my cousins and aunts and uncles, and I had a big family and so forth. And the community we lived in, the place that we went to school, although I did not have to, they were having trouble with finding a school situation for me that I could function in. They required my sister to go to Catholic school all the way. But to me, I would go back, I would bounce back and forth according to try a couple of years here at this school and try a few years there at that school, and, you know, and so forth. They couldn't find what was going to be sufficient for me, was going to be appropriate for me. So, but yes, being brought up that Catholic, I was introduced to, for example, I mentioned sacraments before, to the sacraments, you know, when I was a kid and age appropriately was went through all the processes. So that begins with, you know, you go to schooling for to study as a little kid, I'm talking about to study the different sacraments and sometimes Bible stories and so forth. But the first sacrament that you will encounter is baptism, but that happens before you're conscious. The next one is First Communion, which you are conscious about. And you would be 6 or 7 or so when you take communion. And you have to have had confession before that, just before it, as part of it. And then later there are others. There's baptism by the bishop later, which is called, what's it called? Anyway, the problem was, you know, I didn't want to believe in something that, you know, took advantage of me like that, right? So, I ranted and railed against the Catholic way. I could not trust a priest, you know, anymore. So I absolutely had it caused me to have a poor relationship with God. So today I have a relationship with in AA we call it the higher power. And I have no problem calling him God. I have no problem calling him Jesus if I want, or Muhammad for that matter. I believe in a higher power, someone that's stronger than me, who has my good intentions for me in mind, and that I have to turn to him. I have to ask for that help and then follow what I find in order for it to be effective. You don't just say, well, I believe in God and let God do it all. You have to ask him. But I believe, you know, almost right away sometimes I'll ask God for something and it'll immediately occur. it's not trickery either. You know, it's pretty amazing, frankly. So I did regain the spirituality that I didn't have for a while. You know, I'm happy to report that I'm quite comfortable. Do I attend Catholic functions? On occasion. The occasions that I go to the Catholic functions are those where I go for a different reason, a good reason, that I want to attend the function that happens to be Catholic. For example, you know, I always give the example of having a relative, maybe a cousin that's getting married. And they're getting married in the church because we're all Catholic. Everybody gets married in the church. So she invites me to come to the wedding, but I know that there will be people at the wedding that I will have a problem with unless I'm careful. So I agree to go to the wedding, but then I don't attend the reception. because it's at the reception where I might get attacked. I might be have somebody in my face and so forth. Now, I don't really worry about it these days, but I'm giving you an illustration of something that happened much earlier in my recovery, which was a factual thing. It's a true thing. You know, I avoided as much as possible situations that were going to get me in trouble, you know. but my spirituality returned when I was willing for it to return. It won't come back until you're ready to. And you have to kind of, they call it surrender to your higher power. You have to kind of give up your way and seek God's way. And in prayer, and I do a lot of, not right now, I don't want to say I do a lot. I do plenty of prayer and meditation. I used to do more. But it's in the process of praying. You are asking for something, but in meditation, basically, it's kind of like you're listening for the answer. And if you listen for the answer, you'll get it. Not necessarily immediately, but it'll come. Is that a good answer? I don't know. I kind of lost track of where I was.
Yes, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, Annie. John, did you have any questions for Bill before we move on?
Yes, I just wanted to ask Bill, you know, when you first started NASCA, okay, and I believe, what was that, about 2008, was it? Or six?
It's
somewhere
about 12. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
8 or 9. Yeah, I guess it was 8.
So I know. Just like, look, my life, with the way you're telling your story, Bill, is that you and I are really so much alike. You know, right into the same system, same thing with me, same thoughts, you know, the same way I live my life today. Everything you said about attending functions. My daughter goes to a Catholic school. However, I don't go to Mass, you know, but I will be there for her at times of her need, and those are the functions, right? So I do represent, right, you know, in that way. However, if you ever come down to New Orleans and, you know, you run into someone, I guarantee I'll be right by your side, okay?
Okay.
So no matter what. And so I just want to let you know that's if that's the case. However, you know, I did want to ask you, though, from the beginning of NASCA, you know, to today, I mean, what is your biggest, I would say, probably, I don't know, grace of something that you see in NASCA that you intended to happen probably in the beginning, and this is what you wanted, but how has it grown in the biggest way that surprises you? How about that?
Yeah, that's fine. I can try for that, but I have to say I'm not surprised. It was intentional, most of the growth that we've had. I was appreciative of the fact that some time ago now, we achieved one of my primary goals when I started it, which was I could see that I believed that people like you and people like Penelope and people like Billy and Annie, that NASCA was going to out-survive me. And that was really important to get to that place. I was working towards that, and now I believed that would be the case. So it'll have a longer life. It's not dependent on Bill. It never has been. But I do most of the work right now. But if, you know, if I pass on someday, we pass it on. We give somebody else the opportunity. So that was deliberate, but I didn't know if we'd ever get there. You know?
Right,
in fact,
right.
We still have struggles. We have struggles. We don't have any money, for example. You know, but that's okay. We're gonna do better and better. We're pretty much at a place where I think NASCA could be explosive. You know.
And I'm going to help you get that too. I want it to be explosive, you know. But one thing I want to say to y'all, everybody that's on this panel, and then we'll continue on, is that I love all y'all. You know, tell me deeply.
We love you too.
So I just want to thank y'all. Yeah.
We thank you too, John, and we love you too.
Thank you.
Okay.
So what's your
reminds me before we move forward, and I know we're almost down to 30 minutes left, and the show's flying by, but for those of you listening in, please visit our website, which is www.NASCA, which is NAASCA.org, NASCA.org. And on the homepage, if you scroll towards the bottom, it says we are a completely nonprofit 501c3 organization, recognized, fully recognized by the IRS. And so we do accept contributions and donations. So please, on that front page of the website, there's a donate button. It's done via PayPal. Even $5 helps. So I wanted to make mention of that because we are fully funded and supported through donations and through our membership. It doesn't cost any money to join. As Bill always says, say you want to be a member, you're a member. You have to sign up. You're the star. You're part of the family. So that being said, Bill, back to you.
Thank you for mentioning all that. In other words, you're a member if you say you are. It doesn't cost anything to be a member, but we do have a conduit by which we are self-supporting. We support ourselves through our own contributions. There's no requirement. There are no dues or fees, but there is a need, obviously, in a group this size, and we appreciate people contributing to the NASCA experience. And they're tax-deductible contributions, but, please consider that because it means a lot to NASCA's future. If we get used to, even like you say, $5, $10, $20, if you do it on a rotating, on a repeated basis, like so much a month, that's really helpful because you can kind of set it and go away. And $10 a month or $20 a month for some of us is nothing, but it's a lot to the group because it's a whole bunch of $10 together that would sustain us. All right, should I move on then, Penelope?
Please, thank you.
Okay, the reason that I was glad I was going to do this sharing tonight is because I knew that I would tell my story, which I've done enough of it. Because when I get up to a certain point in my story, I want to go further, and now I can. Because you might find on the website the story of my recovery from the perspective of trying to get reparation or recovery as far as justice goes. In other words, I didn't know that I could even tell my story in public and that it would matter. But we do follow the statute of limitations and we work on them for different states. Every state's different, and so every state has to be worked on independently. And right now, I'm a person who would be able to, for example, bring a suit against my perpetrators New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Vermont, and possibly Canada, I guess. I don't know. And all those places are places where I've been abused. So you have to do it. You have to bring the case in the place that you were assaulted, where the abuse occurred. And, of course, all of these things are violations that are criminal. If any of you are out there and don't know that, I want you to know before I move any further that, you know, abusing a child is a criminal offense. And a lot of us don't get an opportunity to bring our perpetrators to justice in terms of telling the story of our abuse and having it investigated by law enforcement and then putting them in, you know, the pokey and then going to trial and all that. That's criminal. Civil is the damages and so forth that they brought upon you can be compensated. And I will never be have the criminal stuff available to me because of how the statutes work. But civil stuff is changing to a degree. And last year, the state of Pennsylvania was reviewing theirs, and they came very close to finalizing a set of new ordinances that would reduce the statute of limitations. They actually passed it. And then it got unpassed again. But during the time it got passed, people were coming forward who would fit in what's called the window of opportunity is what it means. When they still didn't fit the statute of limitations, in other words, the statute might have been 25 years, and you were 35 years away from the instance when your last abuse, but for a period of time, usually a year or two, they give you a window so that even that you're 35 years away, you can slide in there and be counted and bring a suit. So under that kind of clauses, I did find an attorney. I went through the process of putting it together. I got deposed, by their offices and their people. All this was done on the phone, by the way. I never had to go to anywhere else. They're actually in Texas. Actually, they're all over, but the main office that I deal with is in Texas. The place I have the civil suit is in Pennsylvania. I started to tell you that the statute was pulled back after some of us had taken the move to become active under the statute that they'd originally passed. And so they can't take that away from us. But we still have to wait until the statute gets passed again. And we're already set up. So I'm in like the first group of people who once they set it up again and pass it, will be eligible. Well, the reason I'm telling you all of this is yesterday was the first time that we went to mediation. Now, mediation is where you have a professional person who sort of is the referee, if you want, for a group on one side and a group on the other side, and goes back and forth, trying to see if they can bring the both parties to a mutual agreement. I did not expect that to happen, and indeed it didn't. But it was the first time an overt opportunity came like that to sit in front of the mediator, my attorney, two attorneys from the place I went to school, and so forth. And they asked me questions, and I was answering them. And, it felt very comfortable. And the mediator would then he would take an offering. We said we'd consider $1 million, right? Which we thought was enough money so that they would know that I took it seriously, but also probably too much for them to even think about. But they came back with $50,000. I said, no, that's not going to work. So we gave them another shot at $975,000, and they came back and no. So the whole thing got postponed because we were so far apart, we could tell that yesterday we weren't going to come to terms. Now, we're not locked into the million or the 975 at this point because nobody agreed on anything. But you can see, it gave me a sense of how far away we still are and, and how out of the realm of reality the priests and brothers were from St. Vincent. They have a lot of people at St. Vincent who are suing them. You sue the institution, you sue the individual, you might sue the diocese that the institution's in, and so forth. And they're Benedictines, so you might also sue the Benedictine order as well. There's a whole bunch of people you're suing. And, I've held on this long. I'm willing to hold on a little longer to see where it comes out. But the exciting thing was that I actually showed up. I was invited to. I mean, we put all the pieces together, my attorney and I. But I was then invited to come for the first time to an official meeting of the minds, including the negotiator, who I really liked. And he told me, he said, well, he asked me a bunch of questions. He said, well, from how you answered my questions, I can tell that you're on top of this and so forth. You understand the processes. I said, oh, yeah. So we shall see what happens. I hesitated to use the numbers that I used, but that's in fact what happened, so I don't care. They may all change anyway. But, we have a right to a significant compensation at some point. And they now found out about NASCA. And I said, they said, what have you done? I told them all the bad stuff that I've done and all the good stuff that I've been done, and the good stuff culminated with the development of NASCA and where it is today, and that it has helped thousands and thousands of people for free, gain a foothold in their recovery and even to be supported in recovery. And obviously that was pretty impressive by them. These are all lay people, Wow. So I wanted to take the opportunity to tell my story so you understood where I was coming from, but then tell you what had occurred yesterday, because that's kind of the newest thing about it. And I'm going to upgrade the story as it goes forward. It might be several months before another significant move gets made, but I will keep the group apprised. And there is a link about our founder, it's called, on the front page of the website, I think it's called, that I've added stuff over time that has occurred to me that's sort of my historical stuff. And it's just a few pictures and some articles and things like that, but they're short. Let me see. About our founder. It's under Protecting Our Kids. It's the second to last link on Protecting Our Kids, About Our Founder. That actually has a picture of St. Vincent on it. The last article that I put there included a giant picture. This is a beautiful place. They're extremely well endowed. There are thousands and thousands of alumnus that have gone through it. And it's one of the top college civil rights college. What's that called? Liberal arts college, Catholic liberal arts college in the country. So
yeah,
they've been doing this a long time. Yeah, liberal. Mm-hmm. So I'll set up and let you guys ask some questions again.
Can I say something too, Bill? While you're on this subject.
Sure.
And it's very important, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I also went through the same thing, and I want to tell everyone out here that what Bill just described to you is a situation that it can do a lot of things, okay? And I want to warn you, number one, is that you can be very disappointed, okay? Number two, you can look at it as an educational experience and learn from it, okay? And number three is that you can and will be vulnerable, okay, to meeting some type of figure, but you know that you don't deserve that, okay? And it's all about insurance in the long run. And if you do accept something from them, it is not—it's not going to be counted on your taxes. It's tax-free. However, you will get a statement from an insurance company, just letting you know that they filed insurance on that claim of you. So there is a limit on that, is what I'm getting at. And the limit here is $150,000, okay? And that's it. So somewhere in there, that's what you're going to be getting if you do get the max, just to let you know. And I'm pretty sure that's, close to everywhere, And with me, same thing, Bill went in, and I'm, in the same realm of figure, and yeah, they came back with a joke, So yes, of course, it's been 45 years for me. No, this is almost embarrassing. I'm really just disappointed in what you're doing to me today, kind of thing. However, is that I grew from that, okay? That's one of the things you're going to have to grow out of, because it is and can be triggering, okay? However, if you talk to people that's been there, just like Bill, myself, is that you can learn a lot from it, though. And that experience is really, really good, okay? However, I do want to warn you about some of those things, and that's all I have to say.
My reason for doing this was, first of all, I wanted to go on the record. That's the only reason I came forward originally. Several years ago now, 7 years ago, something like that, I realized that I'd been telling people they needed to come forward and identify that they were victims, because if you don't do that, then as far as law enforcement and the government's concerned and so forth, the crime didn't happen. You have to, in other words, report a crime for it to appear. So I suggested that over and over, and finally heard myself say it one more time and then apply it to me. I realized I hadn't done that myself. So I did. And I went to Maryland, and I went to Pennsylvania, and I went to New York, and I brought cases. And I wasn't trying to win anything. I was trying to improve the statistics. I don't know if I improved the statistics. I improved them by one person. But all of us together might have an effect. However, what did happen was St. Vincent's got into talking to me. This is the place I was in the minor seminary. So they have a different kind of relationship with students that were molested under them. We were supposed to be part of the monastic community, you know, the Christian community. And there were 250 priests on that campus alone. I don't know, 1,500 around the country. Our little school was 90 guys, 90 high schools. And the college was 2,000 to 2,500 something. So it was a community. My heart kind of sang with the ability to be a part of the community until it got pulled down, because I realized there was a lot of sin in the community, basically. You know? So I began talking to them at a certain point, and I told them, they said, well, what do you want? I said, well, I don't really want anything. No, but what do you want? They said, well, I'll tell you what I would really like is for St. Vincent's, for you guys, to admit what occurred to me in public. And perhaps by way of newspaper, newsletter, a letter to the alumni, something like that, say a verified case has come forward from a prepster who at the time around 1970 was abused in a prep school, and we believe his story is true. So we're seeking now any other people in the same era who may have been abused as well. So if you do that, I'll be satisfied. You know what? They wouldn't do it. So I said, hell with you guys. I'm going to sue you. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. I didn't ask them for anything. Almost nothing, except to admit that something wrong. The two priests that I named from St. Vincent, I believe both had histories of being predators with either kids in the parish or kids in school. And, of course, they just got moved around. So the last place they were sent was to the prep school, where there were 90 guys between, you know, freshman year of high school and senior of high school every year. They had a smorgasbord every year that they were given. So I wasn't after any money, but now I am. I want them to pay. So anyway, I just feel better that I've done something. I'm not sitting around anymore waiting for something to happen. You know? So I do recommend it on that basis alone for people who are considering civil cases and so forth, and of course criminal cases too if they're available to you.
Well, Bill, it's Penelope. I mean, I've been pretty quiet this for this show, but I say, you know, I want to thank you, because you know a lot of it too, and what you brought through NASCA is you mentioned the platform and the shows, and not only the platform for special guest nights for survivors to come and tell their story in a very safe place, and some of them for the very first time, and to cross over into that cross that boundary. I like the word that you used in that. But also, you know, when we break our silence and we bring these issues to the table, you know, you and just sharing what you've shared, and I know John has been very instrumental and shared a lot of the work that he's done, singularly and also with others, in terms of bringing awareness to this, is that the laws are changing. The awareness is coming. And there are, maybe not criminally as you mentioned, civilly, there are ways that adults survivors of child abuse can now take some action. And I think even just to take action is part of recovery when we felt that we, you know, we were stifled. So you've also, you know, in sharing what you've just shared, you know, helped to further that dialogue and to give other adult survivors that are either, you know, that are listening, that are in different stages of recovery, you know, more more information, more resources, and hope. And you, you know, we said in the mission statement, we offer hope and healing, but hope that that you don't need to remain stagnant. You don't need to sit back and you know, you can take some action. And you just exemplified that by sharing with us, you know, the latest in your story, especially with, you know, respect to the mediation and the civil lawsuit. So just in hearing it, you know, today, I'm hopeful. I'm not really so much for myself, but for, you know, my other NAFTA family members or other adult survivors out there that are, you know, that had similar experiences to yours that now have, there are more doors that are being opened, more options and more options for taking action than there were before. And you're, you know, you're obviously a part of that. And it gives me hope that maybe one day the more of a microscope, the more voice that's lent to the issue of sexual abuse. And mine was not with clergy. Mine was with family. That now, no, I can't see my family civilly. I don't know. But maybe one day, because there's going to be less places to hide for the predators to hide. And it gives me hope that the more awareness and the more the issue that comes to the table, that there may be hope that, you know, that children that are living in homes where they're being sexually abused by parents, that there's going to be less places for those predators to hide and a bigger microscope on the issue. So those are my comments. I didn't really have a question, but I do wish to thank you for that.
Well, it's my privilege, and I'm go ahead.
Penelope, if you want to see family and be with family, all you have to do is FaceTime me, okay?
Thank you.
You
know
that. Yeah, okay. Let's get that
I
clear.
Do know. I do know.
All right.
No,
I
it's
know
true,
that.
And it's what I so appreciate about, you know,
that's right,
the platform,
yeah,
and the NAFTA family is that, you know, my the cost for me, you know, well, not a cost to me, but their imposed cost to me of breaking the silence was to, you know, sever those relational ties because I spoke, you know, the forbidden, what was the forbidden truth. So you're right. Mm-hmm. In that respect, NAFTA is my family. And I'm grateful,
yeah,
for that. So thank you, John.
And you know, what you were saying too, Bill, you know, was saying there at the end about everything is that, you know, at the end of the day, is that you're going to have to be a part of what the cause is, okay? In other words, if there are statues that are being changed or in the progress of being changed, whether it be civil or criminal, more than likely civil first, okay? After that, they'll probably go criminal. However, if you can participate and be involved, you know, and let them know, because that's what it's based on. I will tell you right now, it is based on testimonies of survivors. That's where it's all at. Because you will, if you want to be that, you know, guy or person or girl, you will be interviewed, you know, by senators and by reps and by insurance people. You know, they'll fight you every step of the way. However, you know, at the end of the day, it's you, the survivors, that make a difference, you know, and that's what it's all about.
You know, like I said, I did not go into this with the thought that I would ever get to the place I am now, even though I haven't won anything now. But that it was just a matter of making it's a matter of educating the public, right? It's half of our mission, which was one of the things that I made NASCA be, was, you know, half of it is educating the public. Because I knew that people did not know about child abuse, and there were really few platforms that that I thought were active enough to really break through that silence. And the second thing, of course, is to help each other by providing different ideas and programs and services that the survivor of child abuse could use in the healing journey. Those are the two things that we do. So this really relates to the first one, because I believe that, you're right, my story does have to do with clergy abuse, but, it affected my family. My family couldn't believe that I would be talking about this stuff. You know, they couldn't believe that it happened to me. And it really damaged my ability to get along with them. My cousins, I had 60-something cousins and aunts and uncles, and they didn't understand it. They were all Catholic. How could you do this to us, to the Catholic Church? So there's all kinds of issues that have to be addressed no matter what your story of abuse is. But you have to, I believe, you know, if you really want to have an effect, you should come forward. You should report, you know, at a minimum. And then I don't know where it goes. For me, it may or may not, you know, win me an award. But I tell you what, when I found out during the tail end of the negotiation yesterday that what John said is true, that you don't get taxed, for one thing, on any winnings that you have. And secondly, and even more importantly, is I thought that if you were in a dispute with somebody over something like this and you won an award, that you had to be quiet about it. What's that called?
Confidentiality.
Confidential, right.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Confidentiality yeah. would come in.
Confidentiality
and I found out
clause,
that,
yeah.
And what I found out, that's not the truth. That's not true. And even starting
exactly
today,
right, Bill.
I asked my attorney, would I be allowed to talk about it starting tomorrow night? Because I knew I'd be on this show. He said, yes, you would. And I said, okay, I'm going to. That makes me really happy. It's the truth. These things are the truth. And our family members need to know the truth. So does the public. And this will never not – every time you make a gain – in your recovery, whatever it is, it will never lose the power of being part of your story, ever.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten there. So it's
they scare people
story,
too.
And it always will be. Hmm?
They scare people with that. You know, basically, it doesn't mean anything. If you want to come out and tell your story and talk about it the very next day, by God, you do it. You know, I know what that is
exactly.
too. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I'm on many levels, John and Penelope and Annie and Billy. I'm really glad that I took the risk of, you know, of calling the state of Pennsylvania at 1.6 years ago or whatever it was to see what was going on in Maryland too. And you know, it took a long time. It's going to take another 5 or 6 years, I think, before it all resolves. That doesn't matter. It matters that we're going through the process. And as I say, every time you achieve something, it belongs to you forever. So this will become, you know, occasionally I'm sure you guys will hear me bring forward a little historical thing that's happened recently, a little more of the story. And, I'll keep you guys in touch with what I learn about these things. I'm learning, you know, as I go along. But it's not something that I got to keep myself. I'm going to give it to all of you. So. Well, I think we got about 6 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah.
The victory really belongs to us all. I mean, your victory is everybody's victory. We celebrate with you because it belongs to us too. And it's important to share.
That's
it.
True. That's true. That's really true. I'm glad you see it like that because that's how I feel too. Our stories are not uniquely ours. Yeah, we bring them out, but they become the families, you know, everybody's story. And some of them, kind of shake the boat. Some don't, but you know, we have a lot of work to do on this topic, and we just have to keep doing it, keep doing it, and keep doing it. I was going to suggest that that we ask anybody who's here still with 5 minutes left or whatever, they have a final thought or question.
Sure.
You know, that's all I was going to do.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So the, Bill, I have a question. This is Annie.
Yeah. Okay, Annie.
My father's dead, my abuser. Are there any actions, civil or criminal, that I can take against them?
No, if he's deceased, he's deceased. Is there a big estate of some sort to squabble
over?
No,
there's nothing. No,
yeah.
I just
so there's not...
you know, have it on the record.
You can try. They may not take a record of someone who's deceased. They may.
Yeah.
It depends on it depends on the jurisdiction, really. But you know, you can still be outside the statute, which you're not. There is no statute to a dead person, but you could be outside the statute, bring up the offense, and it would be recorded, even though there's no opportunity for you to get justice. But in this case, I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
And that's really the question.
Yeah.
So, can you guys hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. So, I just wanted to say thank you for having me on the show and let me listen. I did testify in front of the Joint Committee in Massachusetts. About 3-4 months ago. In Massachusetts, there's a 7-year law for the statute for civilly, and unfortunately, as we all know, it takes a lot more than that. I put my trust in an attorney that I never thought after X amount of years, long story, and I know we're running out of time, but I put my trust in an attorney, in my opinion, exhausted my statute of limitations in a lot of ways, and he did it to more than one person, but... Yeah, I mean, I look at the whole story, and I, you know, you brought it up, and you mentioned $1 million. Unfortunately, I found out the laws after he gave me back my folder, but I looked at the positive of that is if I would have got $1 million in between 2012 and 15, I probably would have overdosed. So there are positives to it, and I do take the positives out of that. And it has never been about money for me. It's always been about getting this scumbag out of there, and he's still there. But I did take the positives, and like I said, I did testify in front of the Joint Committee. It was a good step for my recovery. Just like telling my story on this show was a good step for my recovery, and I do appreciate everything that NASCA has done for me, and I continue to call in. And that being said, I do have to let you guys go. I am on call. I work in the funeral business, and I have to let you go, and thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks for being with us, Billy.
Yeah, Billy, thank you.
Yeah, John, nice to hear your voice, man.
You too.
And, we got each other's numbers, man. We should talk, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Have a good night. God bless. Penelope, I'm really grateful that I had this, this slot. The slot was planned. The meeting wasn't. But the back-to-back events that happened, you know, the first the meeting and now the show, it mean a lot to me to be able to come on and talk about these things. Be real. You know, just be real.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's
going
to go, but I think it's great. Right. So.
Well, I have high hopes since you're involved. It's going to go far. That was very, very good timing. So, Bill, I want to thank you. I want to thank you. It's just been a privilege to be on the host team tonight with Annie and with John and to have you on, and especially sharing your news, you know, hearing it in real time almost 24 hours later. So I just wish to thank you. And I'm going to close up the show now, and I just wanted to remind everybody that the show will be archived in about 30 minutes. These shows are archived and go on the NASCA website under the current show schedule. You can look up all of this
and all the shows, and that's one of the gifts of NASCA with the shows, is that we can listen to them over and over. They're tools to help us in our healing. So with that being said, as I always say when I end the shows, there are enough adult eyes in this world to keep every one of our children safe. If you see something, please say something. It is our moral responsibility. So thank you very much, and good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, now. God bless.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, John Moore.
Blog Talk Radio.